The Sonic Truth, brought to you by Advertising Week 360 and Veritonic, the audio intelligence platform. On this episode of The Sonic Truth, we are talking voice with one of the most recognizable voices in advertising, Rashad Tobakkawala. Rashad and our CEO, Scott Simonelli, dive deep on everything from how voice has enabled some of the biggest technological changes in the past few years to why it's finally having its time in the limelight now. Get ready to have your assumptions challenged during this thought-provoking two-part series. And welcome again to The Sonic Truth.
Welcome, Rashad. This is an exciting episode of The Sonic Truth, and happy to have you and excited to have you. Tell us a little bit about who you are for those of us who may not know and how you got here.
Perfect. So I'm Rashad Tobakkawala. First of all, I'm really happy to be here. Currently, I am an author of a book called Restoring the Soul of Business, Staying Human in the Age of Data. I'm also a speaker and an advisor. One of the companies I advise is the one that I worked for 38 years, called the Publicis Group, which is an 80,000-person marketing and business transformation and communication firm. And most recently, I was its chief strategist and its chief growth officer. I grew up originally in India. I have a degree in advanced mathematics and an MBA in finance and marketing.
There's so many aspects that we want to cover with you today. Hopefully we have enough time. And so from our perspective on The Sonic Truth, we're always trying to explore the role that sound plays in advertising. And there's so many avenues that audio gets to before it gets to advertising, right? From biology all the way through. And I've heard you speak on audio a couple times. So, I think an interesting place we'd love to start is, why do you feel that sound is so important to the human condition and to communicating from a brand to a customer standpoint? Let's just put it in that bucket for the moment.
It is very important for two reasons. It is very important for an emotional reason, which is sound invokes memories, and memories is a way to emotion and storytelling inside someone's mind, which is usually more powerful than a storytelling outside someone's mind. So that is the story and emotional reason why it's so powerful. The rational and mathematical reason as to why it's so powerful is we have basically moved to what I call the colonization of the ears versus the colonization of the eyes. That more time will now be spent in the audio world because we've kind of maxed out in the video world. And as we move into a world of voice and a world of modern AI, and also where increasingly all of us are carrying around more and more sophisticated headphones or phones of some sort, the next generation of growth will be in sound. And as a result, for those two reasons, a growing market plus a highly impactful emotional medium.
Let's start first with the storytelling aspect of it. Storytelling is important, I think, in communicating and in getting, as a brand tries to get their message across, as a marketing organization tries to communicate, storytelling is super important.
Yes.
Audio is part of that story and the emotional part of that story. How would you describe that as in our minds? Why is it so innate?
The reason is before there was the world of audio and video as records, human beings basically were first moved by the sound of music and drums and the sound of nature. Later, when we figured out how to read and we read, it was really again the sound that played in our minds. And as a result, both for ancestral reasons, as well as for the fact that everybody who is educated has done some reading and therefore plays the internal mind, are the two sort of scientific reasons for it. The non-scientific reason, which is also extremely true, is what tends to basically happen is that the most powerful stories are ones that we tell ourselves and ones that we create through our own imagination. When you see a visual, like when I do presentations, people realize I never do presentations with any slides, any video, any photo, nothing. Because I've begun to realize when I just speak, people insert themselves and make the presentation relevant to them. They see themselves inside their own mind. They do not see themselves when someone imposes some other kind of pictorial image on them.
You were made for podcasts.
Yes, so. That's why I believe, you know, podcasts are so powerful. And, you know, Jacob Weisberg, 7-8 years ago, explained to me how powerful it is. And obviously now he runs Pushkin Industries.
Right.
And what it also tends to happen is, in many ways, you actually not only feel more, but you learn more through sound. Because sound and reading allows you to go at speeds and take a whole bunch of things which video really does not allow.
We'll be right back.
How do marketers use insights, like you're hearing on this program, to run more effective campaigns on podcasts, radio, streaming services, and more? By informing every decision with data from the Veritonic Audio Intelligence Platform. Click the link in the episode description to get our infographic that demonstrates how data can work for you now, from leveraging the most effective voice for an ad to knowing how you stack up in the market and forge deeper relationships with customers through sound.
Now, as we kind of go to this role, let's move to the colonization part of this a little bit. So what's changed, right? Like, this has been here since humans existed. Audio has always been powerful. And when we started on this journey, I started as a composer way back when, but even on the Veritonic journey, which has been around for 5 years, we were looking at audio being underserved in the video world, right? That's what we were thinking about in 2015, was, wow, this visual world, the audio aspect of it is underserved. Now we're actually, we're way past that. Why do you think that is? And what do you see? I'm part of what's so awesome about, one of the many things awesome about you, like, what do you see coming next down that road that we're not seeing?
Well, I think, you know, part of it really is, obviously today we're living in a world where we aren't moving out as much. But if you forget about the current issue, once we have the vaccine, no one has basically said we aren't going to be going outdoors and walking around or traveling. We may be traveling in different ways. We may be not doing business travel, but we are going to not just continue to stay in our home. In fact, we're going to go outdoors, etc. And the medium that best carries outdoors happens to be basically voice, because you can take it with you everywhere, including, you know, onto trains and a whole bunch of other places. But it also can walk, it can come with you in the two places where it's very hard. Like, okay, on a train, you could be watching a video. But the two places where it gets really hard is when you're driving a car or when you're walking. Because both of those, if you're watching video, in addition, in one case to being illegal, in the other case, you basically will probably suffer a fracture by falling. So, you know, to an extent, the ability to ingest video on the move has improved so significantly over the last 5 years and is about to increase so significantly over the next five that I don't think people are going to understand. So let me give you two simple examples. Now, one of the biggest ways automobiles differentiate themselves is through their interiors and not their exteriors or their engines, because almost all of those have become relatively the same. And in their interiors, one of the biggest points of difference is their sound systems. In many cases, whether it's, you know, Bose or, you know, or Harman Kardon or, you know, Burmeister or anybody, they actually design their equipment for each individual car. The latest Mercedes apparently has like 14 or 21 speakers, including your seats shake with the music. So that gives you the idea of sophistication there. You obviously have seen the more and more and greater sophistication from noise canceling to smaller in all kinds of headsets as we walk outside. But we also have the ability to now speak to and listen back, because a voice is the first new breakthrough interface. If you remember, originally the only way you could deal with a computer was with a keyboard. After that, you could deal with a mouse. After that, for some computers, and hopefully soon all, you can deal with your finger on the screen and not just on a trackpad. But increasingly, with Siri and everything else, it's going to be with voice. So the fact that in every particular way, the greatest advancements now being made are in the world of audio in cars, speakers, voice interface, is where I think this is going.
interesting point. So voice as an interface, right? So part of this is, okay, audio is easy to consume. We're biologically tied to it. And so you move to this place where it becomes more interactive. Like, for example, do you use a smart speaker? Do you talk to a smart speaker? And do you see that being a big part of the future here, voice as a UX?
I see it as a defining factor, and I see it in part as a generational change. So yes, I use it, but our daughters are here for Thanksgiving, and they're not 10-year-old daughters, they're 30 and 33, and they're constantly talking to devices around the house, which I have placed, but I don't talk to them as much as they talk to them. They think, and we've got both Google Home and Amazon Echo. They talk to them, and they talk to them in ways like, one of them speaks fluent Spanish, so they use Google Home to translate with each other. So there's also a generational shift. So what you always need are two things simultaneously. You need a technological shift, and then you need a behavioral shift. And usually a new generation having grown up finds it much more comfortable than someone like me, who obviously understands it, but it's not second nature. I don't second nature speak to something. They do.
The expectation of my 6-year-old, probably versus the expectation of your 30-year-old, is so much higher as to how she interacts with voice. She expects things to talk back to her, and that's her first reaction is to ask, a smart speaker, ask, an iPad, Siri or Alexa to do it. And I do think it is generational. And I think that will continue to evolve, because now that person's growing up with that expectation.
And as importantly, they expect not only for it to speak back, but for it to understand what they said in the first instance and answer appropriately and correctly. So to a great extent, they are going to become kids who will make us look pretty dumbass, because they're going to ask us questions and they are not going to believe our answers are up to snuff.
You're not as good as the Google Home or smart speaker.
Yeah. They're going to say, who the hell are you?
Right.
That's what they're going to ask us.
The burden now is on an organization to communicate with their customers or their employees. And now that generational shift is happening. That expectation from audio is happening. How does somebody... an organization who, especially if, like, let's say I'm the marketing person or you're the marketing person, I'm not in that generation. How do I meet that expectation? How do I take advantage of that expectation that exists today if I'm trying to communicate with my customers or my employees?
I think what you basically do is most people, I don't think, truly understand the scope of what is going on. So one of the things I advise folks to do is either expose their clients and their partners, or take them on what I call mind-expanding tours. So earlier on in my career, I would take my CEO to, in those days, what was very cool was America Online. So I would take them to America Online when it only had 300,000 people. Or I went to Sausalito and showed them Broadband and what a CD-ROM could do. And that opened up their minds. I wasn't just talking to them. I said, come and sit and talk to the founders or talk to and see what's going on. What I basically believe is aiding someone's self-education gets them there rather than just telling them.
What does the mind-expanding audio tour look like? Or are we not there yet?
I believe the mind-expanding audio are like three forms. One is on the consumption side. On the consumption side, I would say there is the content part of it. And there, I would say companies like Amazon and Spotify are starting to dominate. And I think Amazon just bought Wondery. Obviously, Amazon owns Amazon Echo. They own Audible. And Spotify is trying, in addition to its everything else, trying to corral, some of the big podcasters, etc. It doesn't mean it's only going to be those two. And it's the equivalent of discovering these. So in some ways, the America Online is sitting inside CBS Viacom of that year. These companies are basically doing that. So that is, in the content consumption side. In the interface side, in addition to Amazon, there's obviously Google and Apple, but also everybody from the smart speakers, the Sonoses, from the you know, the Burmeisters, etc., for the cars, and then, you know, the headphone makers from the Sony's and the and other places. And then if you really wanted to think about it also as input, you know, the Rodes and Shure's, etc. So that's what I basically call the interface, not just the voice interface, but all the technology, because the sound requires some sort of some technology interface for the consumption. And then on the rest of the side, you know, companies, I think, like yourselves and others, which help marketers connect with people. So because eventually it's people on the other end. So people utilizing different kinds of equipment to listen to things. And how do they listen? What, how, you know, is it a, you know, as you all have done, what is a female voice versus a male voice? And as more and more marketers and businesses begin to realize that they need to have a strategy for content which includes audio, including not just the audio channels they use, but the audio content that they put on those channels, getting data on how best to create that sort of a lexicon, you know, companies like yours and et cetera are likely to be, you know, in their own version, the America Online. So there'll be three groups unless somebody vertically integrates all of these things.
What's another analog of the audio space today? Like if you're going to kind of start on that mind expanding tour, what is audio right now? What can we compare it to?
So I believe you're at three. And I believe in all those three. And when I tell you about the first one, until recently, people basically believed like I was a crazy man. And that's because somebody told me 5-6 years ago, pay attention. And the first one is basically, broadly, it's modern financial instruments, but I would say Bitcoin, okay? And particularly blockchain is part of Bitcoin. As someone basically told me, they said, if you thought HTTP was big, watch this, okay, 5-7 years ago. So that's sort of one. The second one is, you know, fundamentally, the entire ecosystem today, which I would basically say, this is the, in the world of finance, I would say, this is the Square, right? Or the PayPal of what's about to happen, which is something that's been developing for a few years. And then, you know, 2-3 years later, people realize, oh my God, this thing is sort of real, right? Or 5-7 years ago, when people began to realize, hey, there's something called the cloud, right? And this is basically scaling. So similarly, that's what I believe that we are at.
Right. And these things take time. I'm really curious to hear your opinion on this, because you look at, let's take the cloud, for example. Right. I remember when Salesforce, which is in the news this week for acquiring Slack, right? Like in 1999, when I was one of the first Salesforce users at my first company, they had this no software. You know, people don't think of Salesforce as that, like, you know, it said the word software and had the, you know, the red line through it. Yeah, they were like kind of, you know, pushing for this things, you know, no databases, no software. And the idea that I would have, you know, sensitive information or secure information or information about my company not stored on servers, you know, in behind these four walls was just insane. Right? And then we saw it wasn't just Salesforce. There was a movement from, let's call it 1999 to, you know, 2020, where Salesforce is basically the Oracle. I read something this morning how, you know, Oracle was very acquisitive for a few years. Now Salesforce is doing that. It took 20 years. Right, to go from no software to we're buying Slack for $20 billion. Seeing the trajectory of an industry when you're in it is really, really hard. And I would never expect to be able to do it. I have an impossible time trying to figure out what inning we're in, as people say, using the baseball analogy. Where are we on this? Do you even have a perspective on where we might be in the audio?
Yeah, so I believe we are probably at inning number three, which is the end of the first third.
Okay.
So, and usually these innings oddly last 9 years, very much like nine innings, right?
So you're talking 9 years per inning?
No. Each inning is a year.
Oh, each inning is a year.
But from the very start to the time that everybody understands it, it becomes a very scaled thing and everyone says, oh my God, this is so obvious, and everyone's using it. So the first 3 years is people basically either don't know or are saying, what the hell is this?
Right.
Then the next 3 years, it's scaling all over and it's being plugging and there are network effects. And then all of a sudden, it's like, how did we do without this? What are we talking about? Right? But in most businesses, you'll basically find 3 years, 3 years, 3 years when there are these new things. And sometimes it can be truncated, but I've never seen anything truncated less than 4.5 years. And usually once it goes by 12 years, everybody loses attention. But around 7, 8 years, I mean, between 6 to 9, 10 years is when the whole thing goes on. So innings makes the right, you know, right thing. Or you could basically say, you know, 4 quarters with a little cricket tee between each quarter. So
well, it's because you get impatient when you're in this because you know, everybody's going day to day. Like we went from what's a podcast to Spotify buying, you know, Megaphone or Spotify, you know, buying The Ringer and Wondery today. You know,
it's a big thing. So I do believe that we basically have completed the third inning and the reason I don't say we're in the sixth inning, because you might think, okay, now big companies are buying companies. It's because we are in the sixth inning of what we see, but the third inning of what can be. Okay? Which is a very, very big difference, which is what people don't realize. My own thing is, how do you know what other new stuff is coming, especially when you combine? You know, I've spoken a lot. Like today I was talking to the board of a major company. And by the time I was done, I had like all of them saying, we never thought about things like this. And they, by the way, are very sophisticated. And they understand a lot of things. And I said, I didn't tell you anything new. I told it to you in a new way, right? I told you a new story. And then you began to realize what that meant. So everyone talks about technology and internet and, you know, mobile and all that kind of stuff. And my whole thing is, okay, it's too complicated for me. So let me dumb this down. In the last 25 years, we basically had three eras in the world of what I called the connecteds. So we are now in the third connected age.
Hopefully you're enjoying my discussion with Rashad so far. Be sure to subscribe to hear part 2 on the next episode of The Sonic Truth.